I'm Disney historian Jim Corcus, and when I'm not writing my next book, I'm listening to the Disney Parks Podcast, and so should you.
Welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast with your hosts, Tony Castelnova from DisneyByTheNumbers.com and Parkhopper John from WDWParkhoppers.com. Keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times, and get ready for the Disney Parks Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast. My name is Parkhopper John. I come to you from WDWParkhoppers.com. Joining me on the other side of the internet is Mr. Tony Castelnova. He's from DisneyByTheNumbers.com. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing excitingly well for a Monday.
Well, excitingly well.
Excitingly well. I am coming off a fun weekend.
Yes, I'm coming off of a fun and interesting weekend, too, unfortunately, for different reasons. So before we get into that, let's go through some of, like, the housekeeping stuff, and then we'll talk about, you know, the weekend, and then we'll talk about the news and rumors and stuff. Is that cool?
Can we Sounds do that? Good to me. Yep.
All right. So
this show, you want me to?
Yeah. Tag.
Okay. This show is sponsored by our best friends at ThemeParkConcierges.com. If you are looking to get rid of the pain and the suffering of having to do all the planning in your family, I suggest that you hire my good friend Ramon and his team at ThemeParkConcierges.com. They can take all of that burden. They'll do the dining reservations, the fast passes, come up with a nice itinerary. They'll find out what your family likes and you don't like. And they will do all of that planning for you. You can have them for a half day, which is about 4 hours, or you can have them for a full entire day, rope drop to park close, and they will make the best plans for you. They will do, in Central Florida, they will do Disney World, Universal, SeaWorld, Legoland, Busch Gardens, and probably missing other places that they can do. But this is what you need to do. Need to call them at 407-257-9973, or you can go and email them at Ramon@ThemeParkConcierges.com. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about them and what their team can do for you, you can visit them at Facebook.com/RamonVIPConcierge, or the best thing is go visit their website at ThemeParkConcierges.com and tell them the Disney Parks Podcast sent you for 10% off your invoice. So that's it. I say it every week. Go check them out.
So, hey, we'll let you know, if you haven't yet signed up for the Disney by the Numbers t-shirt club, you can visit DisneyParksPodcast.com/shirt club, and we'll get you signed up for the Disney Parks Podcast, the Disney by the Numbers shirt club, I should say, excuse me. And all you have to do is give us your name and your email address, and then every time a new shirt comes out, we'll send you an email, whether you'd liked it, like it, or whether you don't. There's no purchases necessary. Nothing's going to be automatically sent and or billed to you. You see the shirt. If you like it, great. You can order it. And if you don't like it, that's fine. You don't have to order it. And the prices are an astonishing $13 for a shirt. Is that still correct? Have you not raised the prices on those shirts yet?
Nope. $13, and then extended sizes are only $16. And if you've been in a Disney gift shop looking for a shirt, they're now up to like $32 for a shirt. They're crazy. And this is a quality, nice, short shirt, custom screen prints, custom designs you can't get in the parks. You will be the delight of all your friends, and that will be that.
Yep. So. Yep, so definitely come over to DisneyParksPodcast.com/shirt club and get signed up today. No purchase is necessary. And the last thing that we want to do talk about before we get into the show is, if you listen to us on iTunes, thank you. Don't forget to rate us and review us over there. But we're also available on Stitcher. We're also available on a bunch of different podcast catchers. But we're very excited because we just got picked up on Google Play's podcast service. So if you're an Android user or you really, really love Google Play, you can find the Disney Parks podcast over there. Make sure that you rate us, review us, tell us what you like, tell us what you'd like to hear more of. We do listen. We've gotten some comments that have helped us formulate the show a little bit better. Try to be a little bit more of what we need to be as podcasters, and that makes the show better. And so we want to make sure that you guys do that. And so we're available on Google Play. We're available on Stitcher Radio. We're available on iTunes. And you can still find us each week over on Sorcerer Radio Network each Sunday afternoon. We're there. We'd love to see you there as well. So Disney Parks Podcast, available all over the place.
Everywhere that you want to be.
Yeah, we're like Visa. We're everywhere that you want to be.
Exactly.
We're like the reverse of stalkers. We're there before you even know you're going.
And now, Disney Parks Podcast News.
All right, next up. You know, this week's news, there wasn't really a lot of international stuff going on. Really nothing out of Shanghai or Paris or Tokyo or anything. So a lot of the news this week is domestic, which is fine sometimes, but I do like to know that the other parks exist still. But so some innovative technologies that are coming to the Frozen show live at the Hyperion Theater in Disney's California Adventure are being revealed. In an adapting Disney's Frozen for the stage in Frozen live at the Hyperion, the team at Walt Disney World Imagineering Creative Entertainment sought out new and exciting ways to tell the Anna and Elsa story. Among other innovations, this dazzling theatrical production incorporates state-of-the-art projection and motion capture technology to create a several wow moments for the audience. The Disney team members collaborated with award-winning video and projection designer Aaron Rhyme to produce projection effects that will open up the world of the story, propel the action forward, and blend seamlessly with physical sets, and in some cases, the performers themselves. Now, the one technology that they were telling you about in a video clip that I saw is sewn into the costumes are these RF tags that will allow this video projection to actually move with the actor. So as they move forward or back, the video projection around them will also move with them.
Wow.
So they're almost like in control of the video, you know, which will be interesting to see. I really can't wait to see some video of this thing. There'll be a custom video wall covering 2,200 square feet and includes more than 4 million pixels. In fact, it weighs so much that the stage deck had to be reinforced with steel plates to secure it. It's just one of the incredibly impressive sets pieces that will make Frozen Live at Hyperion a not-to-be-missed spectacular. And this is opening up this May, the 27th, at the Hyperion Theater at Disney's California Adventure Park. We may have to get our sorcerer friend, Bubba, on. I'm sure he will go see this, and maybe he can come on and tell us all about it.
Maybe we can get, you know, Kate, because they go all the time.
Yep. If she goes too, we can get Kate on.
Yeah. Any of our listeners who are Disney land people, we would love to talk about that with you guys.
Yeah, if you go see this on May 27th and you want to come on the podcast, send us an email at disneyparkspodcast@gmail.com. You know, let us know that you're going to see this on May 27th, and then we'll figure out a time that you can come on the podcast and tell us all about it. If you take some video, we can certainly put it up on the podcast page. And, you know, let everybody enjoy it as well. I'd be interested. I really want to see this. I saw some little clips that Disney Parks blog had put out, but I don't think that's really going to do it justice. I want to see the whole shenanigans.
Right. Yeah. Same here.
Yeah, there's a big, a pretty big production team that's going to put on the show each week. There's a lot of monitors and buttons and switches and dials that everybody's playing with too. So
the only downside about when you're doing big theatrical productions, have that much technology is, you know, something's bound to go wrong. I come from a theater background, and it's funny to watch some of those old videos, like when people go see like Phantom of the Opera, because you don't think about it, because there's a scene where he's riding in a boat, you know, back and forth in this labyrinth of lights and stuff, and the boat goes, and he's just sitting there like, I have to sing this song, and I'm supposed to, you know, but I'm sure that they've thought about that, and I don't want to be focusing on the negative, but it's always funny when live production goes wrong.
But you know, that's always something that I think people don't take into account. For Disney, you know, these shows happen, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times a day,
right?
And for the most part, for us, probably go on without a hitch. Now, we don't know everything that's happening backstage or in the production area or whatever, but you know, for us, they go off without a hitch. We enjoy the show, and then we leave and we go on to the next thing.
Right.
And this happens, you know, a gazillion times a day. So, in 4 parks in the Disney World, it's pretty crazy.
Right. You stop and think about like Nemo and Friends.
Sure.
You know, the musical, Nemo the musical. It's just, it's amazing the amount of technology. And they do it day in and day out, you know, 4, 5, 6 times a day.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's just amazing. Fantastic.
Twice a night?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing the amount of technology that goes on. Even stuff like...
maybe one day we'll get to see Rivers of Light.
Hey, who knows? Stranger things have happened.
Maybe the Yeti will wake up. We don't know.
I don't. No need to be mean. So, we have a new contest winner. Each week we ask a trivia question, and we have a contest winner. So last week we asked the question, what was the initial budget for Epcot? Am I close to the question? I'm paraphrasing. Is that the question from last week?
What was the original estimated budget for the construction of Epcot?
Yeah, and I said, couple hundred bucks, and Tony was like, no, it's a little bit more than that. But our good friend Emmett Pike has the correct answer at $1.4 million.
Yeah, it actually went over that. No surprise.
Yeah, way over from what I understand.
Okay.
So congratulations, Emmett. And have you guys already traded emails and stuff, or does Emmett need to send an email to Disney Parks Podcast?
Yeah, if he can send us an email with his address, we'll send him something. If not, I will send him an email. I haven't done that yet.
Yeah. That's at DisneyParksPodcast@gmail.com.
Right. Easy question or hard question?
How about an easy, hard question?
Okay. Here in Florida, we have monorails. If you can tell me the 12 colors of the monorails here in Walt Disney World, Florida, that is the question for this week. We will send you something.
All right. So there's magenta, chartreuse, mauve,
Guadalupe.
There's avocado. There's pineapple. Lemon, lime, pineapple. There's
the banana tree.
The banana. There is the kumquat. There, all sorts of colors you didn't know existed here in Florida.
Yeah, that's a good question that we can ask somebody. You know, Disney does have 4 official colors.
They're all related to Mickey, aren't they?
No, they're not. They're very weird. Yeah, they're very weird color names. I think they're all custom, but they're all.
That's interesting. All right, cool. Yeah, so make a note. We'll ask that question in the next show. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
So, Hollywood Studios is adding 3 food booths, which is good news. Because we need some new places to eat. So, you know, they've got all the construction walls.
There's nothing else to do there.
Well, that's not entirely true. Beginning on May 20th, guests will have the option to choose from three new food booths at Disney's Hollywood Studios. The Hollywood Waffles of Fame, serving delightful sandwiches with one on a waffle. So I guess you get a bunch of sandwiches, and then one of them happens to be on a waffle. Yeah. But they call the place Hollywood Waffles of Fame. All right. Then they have Sliders to the Stars, which is serving delicious barbecue and brisket sliders, which, you know, if it's anything like what they have at Food and Wine Festival, you know, I'm down with that.
Right.
And then they have, God help me, the Bocadas del Lago Nachos y Empanadas.
Sure.
Serving mouth-watering nachos and empanadas, hence the name Nachos y Empanadas.
Why don't they just call it the Nacho Empanada Booth?
Because dude, that's so not creative. These offerings are going to be found around the Echo Lake area and are available for a limited time. So stay tuned as we learn more. And I can't wait to go out there and try all of them. In fact, I haven't had dinner yet, so I'm ready to eat something right now.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. It's with a sad, sad heart that I have to tell you, Disney has discontinued Money. Your money is no good here anymore.
That is not true. The thoughts and opinions of Tony Casanova do not represent those of Disney Parks Podcast.
All right. Anyway, back to the serious stuff. Disney dollars have been accepted as a form of currency at Disney parks and Disney stores since 1987. And they finally discontinued them on May 14th. I have what I call the, in case of an emergency, Disney dollars framed on my wall. I think they were from the 25th anniversary. I have a 10, a 5, and a 1. I have my emergency $16. By the time I go to use them, I'd probably be able to get a pencil. because they're really no value in them anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
how far can $16 go now in the parks?
Well, back when you purchased it, they probably could have easily paid for a day of parking.
Yeah, maybe. So Disney announced that they will seize all sales of the money. Of course, all existing money. They'll still take it from you since you paid for it. Right. So that'll still be good at all Disney locations. Money, Disney money does not expire, so you can use that anytime you want. Disney is citing the increased use of gift cards, you know, as a digital currency for stopping the production of Disney dollars. So, you know, this also, you know, it's an interesting conversation. You know, there's a large amount of, you know, gift cards that go unused. You know, it's like in the billions. It's right. A crazy amount of, you know, gift cards that go unused, which is weird. But, you know, somebody was saying that by them doing this, you know, did it push a huge demand of collectors trying to go out and collect more of it, you know, before this happened, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
Who knows? And, you know, I remember – I think for my birthday this past year, we bought some Disney dollars because it was Stitch was on it. Correct. So I'm glad at least we did that. I would love to be able to find it because I don't know where it went. So I could frame it, but, you know,
it's still in Sarah's wallet.
it might somewhere. God knows. It's one of those bittersweet things. I understand why they did it, but at the same time, it's just one of those times when Disney discontinues something that has more of a sentimental value than really a functional value. I don't care about Disney dollars personally, but there's a sentimentalness to it that, oh, wow, that was really kind of a neat thing that they used to do. You know, it's very similar to, you know, when you ride the monorail, you used to be able to get a monorail license. Yeah, the little card thing. Yep. You know, there's little things that Disney used to do, those little tiny itty-bitty moments where, you know, they discontinued them probably because not a lot of people were taking advantage of them, but a lot of people didn't know it. I didn't know about the monorail thing until you told me that, 5 years ago. Yep. So there's a lot of things that I think, you know, we lose, and you know, I'll miss it. It's right. sad, but you know, Disney's got so many other things going on. I'm sure that they.
Here's the thing. So, you know, if you know somebody, or if it's you, if you know somebody that has collected a set of money all the way back to 1987, I would love to have them on this podcast and talk to them, because I'm kind of fascinated. I did want to collect it. You know, back when I was a kid, I used to collect stamps and coins. And I always said to myself, I should have collected Disney money, because they are little works of art. I mean, they are pretty fascinating. You know, even a dollar bill, even our, you know, regular currency in the United States are little pieces of art. They are hand drawn and handcrafted, you know, till they're put on a, you know, a plate, and then they, you know, make money out of it. But if you know somebody at, you know, or somebody in your family, or, you know, somebody on the internet, and you can point us to that, send that email to DisneyParksPodcast @gmail.com, because I'd love to have them on this show and tell us all about the history of the money and, you know, all the series that Disney's produced. I think it would be fascinating.
Yeah, that'd be a fun conversation.
Yeah.
So another thing that Disney stopped, now this is a big surprise. I wasn't necessarily as surprised about the Disney money thing, but Disney has basically canceled Disney Infinity. So the following is a verbatim quote from John Blackburn, Senior Vice President and GM of Disney Interactive.
Who's currently unemployed.
By now, you've heard the news that we have made the difficult decision to discontinue production of Disney Infinity. From the beginning, Disney Infinity was built for you, the fans, and I wanted to take a moment to thank you, which is very nice, to thank you for your support and over the years, but for creating a community that made Disney Infinity more than just a game. He goes on to say, our goal at Disney Infinity was to bring the best Disney storytelling to life in homes around the world. With your support, we accomplished that. We hope that you had as much fun playing the game as we had making it. Now, he goes on, so what's next for Disney Infinity? We have two final retail releases coming, including three new characters from Alice Through the Looking Glass later in May, and the Finding Dory playset, which is coming in June. And as we turn to the next chapter in our story, again, he wanted to thank everyone who helped bring Disney Infinity to life, particularly Disney's Glendale-based production and publishing teams, their external development partners, and, of course, incredible Avalanche team that has a tireless dedication to the project. I did not hear that this was that unsuccessful. But actually, I listened to a podcast with a bunch of nerds. Sorry. And they were talking about it, how, you know, once you got to a certain age, it just wasn't fun anymore. When you design games, you know, especially if you're designing like family-friendly games, you have to design games for kids, but especially for parents as well.
Right.
Because, you know, if the adults aren't going to play the games, the kids aren't going to play the games that much, and you really have to design games for adults, and adults weren't really enjoying it. And I've played it at Disney a couple times, and they have a little kiosk set up. Sure. Like it. Mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy it at all. I didn't see the value in it.
I didn't either. You know, I think the adults were, after collecting the figures and the pods or the pucks, right, or the little thingies that went with, yeah, it, and they were not cheap. The I bought for my nephew, I think, what was it, the Toy Story toy box, and I'm gonna say it was like $149 for the whole set. And
yeah,
the pucky things were blind. Once again, Disney and their stupidity put it in a bag that you couldn't see what you got, which I think frustrates parents, because when you have two or three kids and they want this, that, or the other thing, you don't want to have to buy a dozen of them just to get the one that the kid wants. You want to buy the one that the kid wants. You don't, right, want to have to go through, you know, a dozen to find the, right, one nugget.
Yeah, and I get the idea behind, you know, it's a game and it's an adventure and we don't know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. But there does come a point when that does become a little bit of a problem.
Sure.
And I'm the same way about, like, Vinylmations. I would collect more Vinylmations if I could know exactly which one I'm purchasing.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%.
And that's just a one of those things where I have a disagreement with the philosophy behind it. Now, yeah. Diehard Vinylmation collectors may love that.
Yeah. You know, well, Disney sees it as, listen, if you're going to want the set, you're going to buy all of them. Or you're going to buy a box, and you're going to get one set, and you're going to sell a set. I don't want to have to go through that. I just let me buy the set, or let me buy the ones I want. That's just me. Now, the other thing, too, I heard is I guess they're kind of getting out of the game business. They are now going to license their characters to game companies like EA and let them make the games. They're in the game-making business. Why is right. Disney trying to be in the game-making business? That's not their core strength. You know, right. Go to EA, say, hey, we have an idea for a game. Here's our lineup of characters. We'll give you the character models and yada, 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 and the 3D, you know, whatever, so that you can take these characters and make a game out of them. I think that's what they're going to do from now on. And I really think maybe this guy, John, he may be out of a job, or he may be just the development team now, maybe a smaller core set of people. That just says, you know, these are the kind of games we want, you know, EA or, you know, whoever to go out and make. But I think they're getting out of the game-making business as well.
Right.
Now, I don't know if, you know, like the mobile things are going to be out of their wheelhouse too. You know, like the Kingdoms game. You know, I don't know if this thing, you know, by Game Loft here. Can't see mm-hmm. it. I don't know if this is going to be out of their wheelhouse too. You know, they don't make this game. They're licensing, you know, they're telling this company to go make it. So maybe they really are going to be out of the game business completely. You know.
Well, I think it makes sense. You know, Disney, Imagineering, theme parks, movies, animation, all that stuff makes sense. That's Disney's bailiwick. Maybe the best thing that they could do is do what they did with Pixar. You know, fine. You know, maybe yeah. they just need to buy EA and be done with it.
Right.
You know, we own EA. Done. You know, I don't think that's going to happen because I think EA has relationships with another theme park down the road, but that's
yeah.
just me.
Yeah, it could be. Well, Nintendo does now.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. yeah so Nintendo. That could be very interesting.
All right. Hey, we mentioned SDK, and SDK will open on May 25th. So get your steak knife and your fork. It's time to chow down, my friends. You can now make reservations at SDK. You can currently do it by phone by calling 407-917-7440. And I will tell you that I made reservations today through the website going to stkhouse.com. So, John, we have reservations for May 29th at like 7:49. You're going to be gone, aren't you?
Well, I come back on the 30th. No, 30.
Well, I will be at STK.
I come back on Monday. Yeah, have fun. I come back on Monday.
Yeah. So the new SDK will be located within the waterfront setting of the landing of Disney Springs. The SDK is a unique ambiance that blends the elements of modern steakhouse with a sleek lounge, including a DJ atmosphere, emphasizing a social fun environment. At approximately 14,000 square feet, the Orlando Outpost will be one of the largest SDK locations. STK Orlando will have two dining floors, including a main level, and the only rooftop dining venue in Disney Springs. So there you go.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, I did look at their menus from some of their other locations, and literally everything is a la carte. I think when you order, all you're going to get is a plate and a piece of meat. If you want vegetables yeah. or potatoes or a napkin or whatever, I think it's all a la carte. And I don't think it's going to be super cheap.
Yeah, that's how Ruth Chris does it. So
yeah,
makes sense that they would do it that way.
Yeah. So We'll see. I'm excited. I have reservations. I'm going to go. I'll go check it out, and then we'll report on it here. Maybe I'll do a live Periscope or something.
Yeah, you should definitely do that. Yeah. Be nice if they had smell and taste of vision.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So once they get that technology out, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be good.
So we need to go down the rumor road for just a moment. We have a new Disney rumor that I've been seeing. I know you've been seeing it.
Oh, yeah.
Walt Disney World is thinking about overhauling the parking at the Magic Kingdom to include a possible entrance for Disney's Hollywood Studios. Disney's filed plans to completely overhaul their parking structure for the Magic Kingdom, clearing the roadways for a possible new entrance to the Hollywood Studios. Well, it appears that Disney wants to build a flyover of sorts to allow for bus and resort traffic to bypass the toll booths and just continue on northbound World Drive that would take you to the Magic Kingdom resort areas. And it also shows a southbound connection. Now, this southbound connection would greatly relieve traffic congestion on Seven Seas Drive, especially around shift changes. Another diagram shows what appears to be a new entrance. Not a new entrance, but rather a new exit. The exit seems to be part of a larger widening project for Floridian Way as work continues on a possible north entrance at Reams Road widening project. This is still a rumor and has yet to be confirmed.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah, the back end of the park is tough at shift change. I feel bad for cast members that have to go out that way. It really needs to be wider, Reams Road. Reams, you know, when I started back, there was nothing back there. There was no housing at all. Wow. It was literally orange trees. It was completely orange groves. And now it's this little, barely a two-lane road. There's really no shoulder to it. You know, it's just enough room for two cars, and that is it. And, you know, when shift change happens at the Magic Kingdom, and there's, you know, literally thousands of cars trying to leave and, you know, other people trying to get in, it is a mess back there. So, you know, some of these plans are saying it's going to help that congestion in the back, which is Reams Road. And then if you're like at the Grand Floridian, that Floridian Road, which then goes into, you know, where the Magic Kingdom parking lot dumps out of, right. That is also going to get widened to allow traffic to come in and more traffic to go out, because that is also it's only one way on Floridian, and then once you get to the Magic Kingdom parking, it's only one way out of World Drive. No traffic can come in. You'd have to go to the toll plaza, and that's what they're trying to say. And we all know that the studio's entrance is going to get moved. It's the whole big thing going on over there. You know, once those plans are out there, they'll be out there. But, I you know, there's all this talk that they're going to move the parking lot. But I agree also, you know, with I've seen a couple of bloggers and, you know, people post it is, you know, Disney, start building the parking structures vertical. You know, stop building all these flat parking lots. Start building a parking structure.
Right.
You can fit more cars this way. I mean, we learned that from Disney Springs now. You have two of them. So we know you know how to make them.
Well, we learned it at Disneyland because they couldn't build large. Yes. They had to build up.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I get, you know, Walt's vision, you know, was to build that suspense. You know, if you're at the Magic Kingdom and you're on the fourth – they don't want you to see the castle. They don't want you to see that, you know, the train or the what. They want to build that suspense to get there. I get that. And even, you know, like, all right, the studios, if you build something over two stories, well, you're going to be, you'll be able to see the back of the park, never mind the front of the park.
Right.
I get that. But, you know, I think nowadays it's just more efficient with the amount of guests that are coming. You know, Epcot is a great example. You know, Food and Wine, I mean, sometimes a lot is full. They're parking you at Animal Kingdom and then bussing you over. That's a great example of, you know, building two structures in that parking lot. Maybe you don't have to build them too high so you can't see, you know, too far into the park, but two or three levels, I would think, would certainly alleviate your problem. That's two more layers of parking you didn't have.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. It's my two cents. Go up, not out, Disney.
Yeah, you know? that'd be fascinating. I'd love to see what they could come up with. You know, too bad we don't live someplace where they could go down.
Yeah, that would be fun too. Well, if they went down, they'd be underwater.
Yeah, here they would be. Yeah,
yeah, we'd be in submarine land.
20,000 leagues of Disney parking.
Yeah, exactly. We parked your car, sir, but it's a little wet. Exactly. Hey, I haven't listened to this yet, but it is on my list this week. Lucasfilms launched an online Star Wars show to discuss weekly Star Wars news. Now,
that's awesome.
Is there weekly Star Wars news? I mean, do we have enough of it that we need a show?
Yes, we do. Because the Star Wars universe is not just the movies.
I
got the movies. You got the comic books. You've got all the production stuff for the movies. They've committed to a movie a year. Yes, there will always be Star Wars news coming out. Not to mention, you know, Star Wars Celebration they're going to have coming to Orlando. Yeah, there's tons of news. I think this is a great, you know, a 7-minute show, totally worth it.
Yeah. Okay, so the Star Wars show is premiering Wednesday. It is a weekly 7-minute recap of the latest news and we should do a 7-minute show. A weekly recap.
There's a lot of people who wish we would.
Events plus interviews. How are you going to interview somebody in 7 minutes with super fans and guest celebrities? The series from Lucasfilm and Disney Consumer Products and Interactive Media is hosted by Andy Gutierrez, the StarWars.com digital communication manager, and an actor fanboy, Peter Townley. There's an abundance of Star Wars news and information right now and for the foreseeable future, says Senior Director of Content Programming at Lucasfilms. The Star Wars show will be the place for news and old fans to engage with. Every aspect of the franchise in fun and authentic ways. Episodes of the Star Wars show will be available each Wednesday at 12 noon Pacific time on the Star Wars YouTube channel or at StarWars.com, the official Star Wars app for iOS and Android, and the Star Wars social media channels, including Facebook and Twitter. So they are just going to litter the internet with this show as much as they can.
Right. Yeah, and there's a market for that. Why not?
Yeah. Interestingly, the set for the show was apparently built in an old copy room at the Lucasfilm offices in San Francisco. And the show was originally scheduled for a surprise launch on Star Wars Day, May the 4th, but it had been postponed due to scheduling issues. So there you go. You're going to have to go get it, subscribe to it. I wish they were on iTunes or something that I can, you know, I understand I can subscribe on YouTube, but then I have to go to my YouTube. I got to go there. I want it pushed to me in some kind of format, and, you know, some kind of podcast format.
Well, can't you subscribe to stuff for the YouTube app and then turn on notifications?
You can, but, you know, it doesn't, you know, once I say no to the notification, it's gone. It's not in a list or something that I can always, you know, I don't know. It's just me.
No
it's
worries.
My stupidity. Don't worry about
but
it.
But do a recurring event on your calendar at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And with the link, and then just all you gotta do is tap the link, go straight there. Yeah. Problem solved. I'm a problem solver. Life coaching. It's what I do. JohnCDonahue.com. Done.
All righty.
Hey, Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, Speech is here. I know you're a big fan of the Flying Fish, as am I. We found out that the Flying Fish Cafe now has a new name, and a new chef, and a new cocktail lounge next door, which that makes me really excited because I just love going to Disney and just hanging out with my friends and enjoying a cocktail. So opening date for the new Flying Fish restaurant is set for late summer at Disney's Boardwalk. The cafe is definitely gone from the name, and diners will be welcome to a sophisticated interior that still pays homage to the golden era of seaside boardwalks. Now, Chef Tim Mahoras, or is it Majoras? I would say Mahoras,
yeah.
Who has been on the Flying Fish team since 2011, takes the helm in the kitchen, and Disney met with him and some of his team and put this out there as part of the Disney Flavor Lab to see what's cooking in the new menu, which is still in the works. But we did get a little taste of some of the starters that they have, like the seared yellowfish tuna, which is going to be served with compressed watermelon with a hint of Tahitian lime oil and fresh limes. There's going to be paper-thin avocado slices with crisp radishes, pickled daikon, and a small edible viola flower. My mouth is watering. And a drizzle of blood orange oil is all that one dish needs, apparently. Sustainable fish is going to be the rock star at this new menu. And Mahoras, his new Fruits of the Sea appetizer features rock shrimp and clams from Florida, grouper cheek, mussels, and a splash of brandy and a rich lobster stock. The seafood is served over a generous dollop of velvety celery root puree and adds a depth of flavor to the dish. Simple flavors and a deft touch within the kitchen. Stig Jacobson, who's the general manager and sommelier at the Flying Fish, says he's happy with the expanded space for wine storage and is finding gems for a more in-depth wine list. The interior features an all-new kitchen and dining room with expanded space for private dining events, sparkling architectural accents like golden wing room panels, and an impressive chandelier that mimics a school of flying fish swimming overhead. Next door, the new Abracadabra Bar Lounge opens, taking the spot formerly occupied by the candy and ice cream shop. The new Curious Cocktail Lounge combines the golden age of magic with the magic of Disney storytelling. So look for whimsy in the design from the Walt Disney Imagineering team, who creates stories in true Disney fashion. And according to WDI, the lounge was once a secret stomping ground for famous touring magicians, local boardwalk illusionists, and the loveliest magician's assistants of the day. After every magic show, these prestidigitators would gather at the bar where they'd conjure up some new cocktails, swap magic tips and tricks, and often stay up all night attempting to out-charm each other with their extraordinary illusions. According to boardwalk lore, it was on just such an evening that every single magician in the lounge vanished into thin air, never to be seen again. And after sitting vacant for nearly 70 years, the Secret Magician's Lounge is now back and restored to be in the spotlight. Abracadabra Bar guests will get a special peek into the sophisticated social club, and while it is rumored that the magicians who frequented the lounge vanished without a trace decades ago, their magic still remains strongly intact and can be seen, heard, and even savored in the bar's signature cocktails. From its enchanted magical show posters and mystifying mirrors to vintage props and tricks left behind years ago, Abracadabra Bar promises to be just as surprising and magical as its name suggests.
They're going to make your money disappear.
They are going to do that. So it seems to me, if I'm reading this correctly and reading in between the lines, this is going to be another quote-unquote interactive type bar.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's going to be great. I think this is awesome. I think it's awesome. Totally awesome.
I think it's what the boardwalk needed. The food was good there. I think it kept escalating to above California Grill pricing, which I thought was kind of crazy. But I think it's going to be interesting. And this private place for private events, I think, will still be – I think they used to have a chef's table there, and I think that's what they'll use that for Unless, of course, you buy out the room. So I'm excited. Yeah. This is not supposed to open until December. And if they're going to open this by the end of the summer, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm sensing a meetup here, too.
Definitely.
Sensing a meetup. I have a friend who is a magician who lives in New Jersey. Vince, you know who you are. And if I can ever get him to come down here again, Vince, you should come down here. We should come. We should go there and we should do a magic show. He should do like a little magic show. We'll have a meetup. He'll make your money and your cocktail disappear. I'll make your cocktail disappear if he can make your money disappear.
That'd be fun. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. You heard it, Vince. Now you have to come down.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah. He's been to the Magic Castle. Yeah. Anyway.
I just like to say, hey, we should just interview him. I'd like to hear those stories.
Yeah. Yeah. He's good, too. Hey, also at the boardwalk, Ample Hills Creamery finally opened. And I think this is the other place we're going to go for a meetup, John, coming soon. So May 15th, the Disney Boardwalk Entertainment, Dining, and Shopping Area, keeping with its timeless charm of the 1930s, the coastal surroundings. The Ample Hills Creamery is a whimsical take on the turn-of-the-century ice cream parlor. The bright, colorful shop is located next to ESPN Club and overlooking Crescent Lake. I think there might be seats inside. I think there might be. I'm not sure. I'll have to look at the pictures again. But it is very, very bright and colorful inside. But if not, there's outside and there's ice cream. And worst case, we just go to ESPN.
Yeah.
Have
a hot dog.
Or just go inside to the boardwalk and go sit in the Bellevue Lounge and eat the ice cream.
Absolutely.
So I think we're going to head there. Since it's Bob Iger's favorite place, I'm excited. I want to see what kind of ice cream Mr. Iger would like. I'm going to ask for the Bob Iger special. That's what they should have on the menu.
What do you think the Bob Iger special is made out of? You think it's ice cream with little gold flakes?
I think it's one scoop of everything with all the toppings and then some gold and money stuffed in it or something. I don't.
I think the Bob Iger special is a scoop of pistachio ice cream because it's green, served to you by someone wearing a Mickey Mouse costume while you get your feet rubbed and someone just like throws money and makes it rain on you.
All right, sign me up.
Yeah, that's what I think.
All right, hey, if you're looking, if you really like the show and you like what we're doing, you like the podcast and the video component of it, and you'd like to contribute a couple of pennies from your couch cushion, go visit us at patreon.com/DisneyParksPodcast. We have different levels of giving, and depending on how much you want to give, we'll give you a little prize package in return. So, if you have the time, please visit us at patreon.com/ Disney Parks Podcast. We want to thank our current contributors. We want to thank David and Stacy and Willie and Eva for their contributions. We appreciate you and want to thank you. Anyway, thanks for listening. We hope you had a great time. Go visit us at DisneyParksPodcast.com. We are on the Facebook at Facebook/ Disney Parks Podcast. We're over at the Twitter at Disney Podcaster, and you can follow us and all of our doings on the website. You can email us at DisneyParksPodcast@gmail.com. And as we say around here, kiddies, we'll see ya in the parks.
The Disney Parks Podcast is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company. All Disney parks, attractions, lands, shows, event names, etc. are registered trademarks of the Walt Disney Company.
Like a boat out of the blue. Fate steps in and sees you through one reach upon the star. Your dream.